The battle began on a cold January day back in 1973. That's when seven justices on the United States Supreme Court ruled that abortion should be legal in all 50 states. Seven unelected judges, 47 years, and 60 million innocent lives later. The fight for life continues. I'm Jim Daly, president of Focus on the Family. A lot has transpired in the quest to defend the preborn over the years, but I believe we've reached an inflection point in our nation's history. We took the message of preborn life to Times Square last year, to the crossroads of the world. Tens of thousands stood with us in the middle of Manhattan, and over 100,000 watched online. A miracle happened in New York City that day in May, when protesters saw the 4D ultrasound image of a preborn baby. When they heard that little boy's heartbeat echo between the buildings, the city fell silent. This is the power of seeing life in the womb. Set aside the politics, tune out the shouting. Show the world the baby, and the baby will change hearts and minds. This is going to be a unique hour. What you're about to see is going to challenge you. Some of the things you see and hear might even make you uncomfortable. We get it. But it's also going to inspire you to action.
Guys, we are the generation that will end abortion.
It will strengthen your faith and your trust in a sovereign God who rules over the affairs of men and women, who is truth. History will judge us. Will we rise to the moment, or will we bury our heads in the sand? Our children are watching. The fate of generations to come hang in the balance. And that's why I've asked our good friends, Jeannie Mancini, president of March for Life, and Benjamin Watson, former NFL player and pro-life advocate, to host our event. It's time. It's time for ordinary Americans to speak up for the defenseless and the voiceless. It's time to stand up and be counted. It's time to recognize that the struggle for life is real. And as the battle for truth rages, science and technology are on our side. It's time to see this defense of preborn life as the civil rights issue of our day. It's time to see life as you've never seen it before. It's time to See Life 2020.
Welcome to See Life 2020. I'm Benjamin Watson along with Jeannie Mancini. And today is about two heartbeats, a mom and a baby.
Both Benjamin and I have seen how abortion devastates the hearts and homes of women, men, and families.
In the next few minutes, we invite you to witness powerful stories and hear from Christian leaders committed to the movement to end abortion, using grace, love, and conviction.
You'll also hear soul-stirring songs from award-winning artists and an anthem that's been particularly commissioned to the declaration of every heartbeat.
And finally, you'll see and hear an incredible 4D ultrasound of a baby offering a window into the reality of life in the womb. Everything we're doing comes down to saving one life at a time and touching two heartbeats.
Since I remember, I always thought that I would never have an abortion. I thought I would never consider abortion, but there was a tiny moment I had to consider that just because I was so scared. What if I can? What if I have to take this? I moved to New York 6 years ago. I'm from Barcelona. I shared an apartment with two more people. I'm a waitress right now and a manager at the restaurant. My shifts are at night. And then after work, I would go out with my friends and have drinks. I had a boyfriend. We didn't live together, but I did have a boyfriend. One day, I realized I didn't get my period. I felt a little dizzy, so I thought I would take a test just to make sure that everything was fine. And then I called a friend. So she told me, okay, we need to make sure, so maybe we have to go to a doctor or something. I don't have a health insurance. So I found this one, 45th Street and 6th Avenue in Manhattan. I went there the following morning, and that's when they took another test. and it was the fifth positive test. And from the last one, like, okay, yes, you are pregnant. How much more you need to know? So, but I really want this baby. But I don't know if I can have this baby. I understand that there's people that can be scared, especially when we don't plan this. It happens. So you don't plan this and you get super scared and maybe you don't have the support. And I understand that people can think about finishing that problem at some point. My life would be 100% different and in a bad way.
Here, Planned Parenthood means so much to me personally. When I knew I was pregnant, I knew immediately what I was going to do.
And I have had an abortion. It didn't have a heartbeat, it didn't have a face, it didn't have feelings, it was a clump of cells and tissue.
My question is, that unborn fetus that cannot live outside the mother, what right do you have to tell me to carry it to term if it's an unplanned pregnancy? And odds are that if it goes into the foster care system, it will face severe neglect and abuse.
I can use this, twist off a limb, pull it out, and that's okay. That act of violence is okay because it's my property.
What I'm saying is that while the baby is inside of your body, actually, essentially that is what I'm saying. While the baby is inside of your body, you have the right to decide what to do with it because it resides in your body, because it is a part of you, because it is not yet its own autonomous thing, because it is directly affecting your life.
I think the greatest sin in the world is bringing children into the world that have disease from their parents, that have no chance in the world to be a human being, practically. Delinquents, prisoners, all sorts of things just marked when they're born. That, to me, is the greatest sin.
Abortion became legal in 1973. I said to my granddaddy, "Granddaddy, I'm going down to Planned Parenthood. I'm going to get an abortion. It doesn't even hurt as bad as pulling a tooth." He says, "Girl, they're lying to you." I said, "Well, they told me it was a blob of tissue." "No, that's my great-grandchild."
One of the greatest lies, I mean, there's so many lies, it's a web of lies that the entire abortion industry is built on. But one of the greatest lies is this idea of choice, that Planned Parenthood is offering choice. They don't offer choice, they offer abortion. There's one choice in their facilities. And they don't provide prenatal care, they don't provide adoption, they don't provide parenting classes. You would think from their name, Planned Parenthood, they're like preparing parents for parenthood. They're not.
I want to talk specifically about what a first trimester abortion is and what it looks like from a person who ran a Planned Parenthood abortion facility and was there for 8 years. The doctor starts performing the abortion. He's going to insert into the woman's uterus, into the cervix, metal dilation rods, graduated metal dilation rods.
Would I now de-rip it apart?
No, so okay. That is a misconception.
He's going to dilate the cervix enough so that he can insert something called a suction cannula.
But there is no ripping of anything that's okay. Happening. What we do is we gently dilate the cervix and remove the contents through what is like a straw.
That cannula looks like a straw. It is graduated. It gets bigger depending on how big the baby is in the womb so that the head will be able to fit through that suction cannula.
That's the pregnancy right there. It's pretty small. It doesn't really look like much.
He's going to take that probe and he's going to blindly poke around inside the woman's uterus until he thinks he has enough blood and tissue in a glass jar. That glass jar is going to go into a lab called the POC lab. POC in the medical community stands for products of conception. The products of conception is, of course, the baby. But you can't say baby inside of the abortion clinic. So we said POC or POC. Or if the staff was feeling funny, they would say that it stood for parts of children.
But there is no ripping of anything that's okay. Happening. What we do is we gently dilate the cervix and remove the contents through what is like a straw.
After all the parts were accounted for, the POC lab technician would dump everything out into a glass baking dish and she would reassemble the parts of the baby. Please understand me, I'm talking about first trimester abortion. Yes, there are parts. Yes, they must be reassembled.
I began to be a different kind of person. I was a young woman, women's right, a woman has a right to choose. Planned Parenthood convinced me that a baby was a blob of tissue, Don't talk to your pastor. Don't talk to your friends. You've got a new friend, Planned Parenthood.
When do you think personhood begins?
I think personhood begins when the fetus is born. I don't think that you're going to give rights to something that's still inside of my body. And that is inside of my body. So if it's not outside of me, it doesn't have rights.
I think people can do whatever the f- they want to do.
So there's no moral right or wrong?
I think people can do whatever the f- they want to do. They can have an abortion. They can f- 5 people tonight. They can come
and
listen to your speech, and they can still have
questions
for you.
And you can set banners on fire, and that's fine.
People can do whatever the f- they want to do.
So do you believe that there's a moral right and wrong?
I can say it one more time to the people outside. I can do whatever the f- they want.
You want to have children? You know how much children cost? Your privilege is ahead. Can you afford $1,000 medical bill right now? Yes, you can, but half the people in this room can't afford it. And then you stand there talking about, oh, let's give women what they need. Why can't women need this,
ma'am?
Why can't women be independent on their own? Why can't women just live in a world where they can make their own decisions and their own bodies and their own time? I do not need you to help me. I do not need you to give me anything. Like, let me do what I want to with my body.
But it's not your, just your body when we talk about abortion.
You're about yeah, that's who he is, and I don't
mean. Continue to fight long and hard together for free abortion on demand without apologies.
And I wouldn't talk to my granddaddy anymore. I wouldn't talk to my mama. I would not talk to God. But I was different. I was struggling. I was pro-choice. So on the outside, I was smiling. I was fine. But I was changing. So I became entrenched, but I was suffering silently. I was suffering inside. The pain, emotional, psychological, physical, and spiritual. My cervix was damaged, my body was damaged, my natural biological processes were interrupted, and some of that I still have to live with today.
You know, one of the things interviewing so many women on the Focus on the Family broadcast that I've noticed is how women have this unbelievable capacity to look at their own hearts first. It brings me tears because I see it every time. They say, where have I failed? And here's the reality. This is the message, the core message of the gospel. We've all failed. We all are sinners and fall short of the glory of God. We all need Christ as our Savior. So no matter what decision you've made in the past, wherever your path has gone, let's start with bringing you back to your salvation in Christ and then move forward from there. There's always hope in God.
Facing an unexpected pregnancy can be overwhelming. You might feel confused, angry, afraid, or alone? If you carry your pregnancy to term, who will be there with you? How do you find practical support and resources during your pregnancy and afterwards? And how do you face the future with confidence and hope?
And what about after an abortion decision? Both women and men wrestle with unresolved feelings of guilt and shame after terminating a pregnancy. If you or anyone you love is experiencing these feelings after an abortion, where can you turn? Those are the questions we want to answer in the next few stories.
I'm Melissa Oden, and I'm the survivor of a failed saline infusion abortion.
In April of 1978, I survived a vacuum aspiration abortion.
In December 1987, I survived a D&E abortion, but my twin did not.
In March of 1995, I survived a curettage abortion, which is likely the cause of my deformed arm today.
In August of 1977, my biological mother, as a 19-year-old college student, had this abortion forced upon her against her will by her mother, my maternal grandmother. This type of procedure involved injecting a toxic salt solution into the amniotic fluid surrounding me in the womb. The intent of that toxic salt solution was to poison and scald me to death. We actually know through my own medical records that I didn't soak in that toxic salt solution for just 3 days, but actually 5. While they tried time and time again to induce my birth mother's labor. On that day, I was delivered believing that I would be a successful abortion, otherwise known as a deceased child. But here I was, accidentally born alive.
When someone cannot continue a pregnancy, the lengths to which they will go to end that pregnancy are pretty profound. Abortion is healthcare.
Why is abortion an important issue to you?
Because it's healthcare. It's basic women healthcare. And it's our body, our choice.
The next time you hear someone say that abortion is healthcare, remember these three things. First, the purpose of healthcare is to heal or preserve life. Abortion fails this test. It's true that in rare and tragic cases like tubal pregnancies or cancer, doctors may not be able to save the preborn child as they seek to help the mother. We know that these tragic and rare situations involving the life of the mother are not the focus of the abortion debate. Abortion is debated because almost all abortions are done simply because the mother no longer wants to be pregnant.
When I was a third year medical student, I was on birth control pills and I missed a pill, as so many women do, and I had an unplanned pregnancy. I remember feeling like a ton of bricks had been dropped on my shoulders and wondering, like, how am I gonna get through this last year of medical school? It's like one of the most challenging years, and then go on to be a mother. It just doesn't, like, how am I gonna achieve my career goals? And I went to Planned Parenthood to have my abortion.
The last thing you're gonna get in an abortion clinic is facts about your baby growing in your womb. I mean, they're gonna do everything they can to dehumanize that baby and to tell you that abortion is the best option for you because they're trying to make a sale. They're trying to push their agenda.
It is in that context that we rightly question whether abortion is healthcare, which leads to the second point. Abortion is not healthcare because pregnancy is not a disease. Where healthcare seeks to preserve healthy functioning, abortion interferes with it. Not only is abortion the intentional killing of a human life, a pregnancy is evidence that the reproductive system is functioning as intended. Abortion is more accurately described as anti-healthcare, which leads to the third point. Abortion is not healthcare because it doesn't preserve life, it ends it.
Taking a life is not healthcare. So we in the church particularly, we have to point that out. We have to shine a light on what is true. Healthcare is about saving lives, not taking lives.
And I've had patients say to me, you know, I'm so glad it's you. Like, I'm so glad you're doing my abortion. It's one of those other reasons why I consider it a privilege to do this work. I'm Dr. Floyd, I'm a provider, and this is healthcare.
The doctor comes in who, by the way, has no conversation with the woman before the abortion. The fact that many people say abortion should be a decision made between a woman and her doctor is laughable. There is never a time where the abortion doctor goes in, sits down with the woman, and goes over risk, alternatives, and benefits to abortion. It does not happen.
Are you in favor of any restrictions whatsoever on abortion?
No!
It is totally the woman's right to choose what she wants to do. It's her body, her choice.
I don't know how we got here, both as a state and a nation, but it's both embarrassing and a little bit terrifying.
Who are you to tell me what to do with my body? It's my decision. It's not yours. And how dare you tell me it is?
We ignore the science, which tells us clearly that it's a unique individual human life, the moment of fertilization. Most people have never really sat down and really considered this, and they've never really had opportunity to see the victim of an abortion, to understand what happens to that baby with a beating heart, with arms and legs and a face, what happens to them during an abortion procedure.
Your patient today is 17 years old. She's 22 weeks pregnant. Her baby is the length of your hand plus a couple of inches. And she's been feeling her baby kick for the last several weeks. She's asleep on an operating room table. You walk into that operating room scrubbed and gowned, and after removing laminaria, you introduce a suction catheter into the uterus. This is a 14 French suction catheter. If she were 12 weeks pregnant or less, basically the width of your hand or smaller, you could basically do the entire procedure with this. But babies this big don't fit through catheters this size. After suctioning the amniotic fluid out from around the baby, you introduce an instrument called a Sofer clamp. It's about 13 inches long. It's made of stainless steel. The business end of this clamp is about 2.5 inches long and 1/2 inch wide. There are rows of sharp teeth. This is a grasping instrument. When it gets a hold of something, it does not let go.
Generally, the price of an abortion is determined on the skull size of the baby. We weren't going to give her the opportunity to look at her ultrasound, and we needed her sedated for that because we couldn't take a chance. Well, I mean, we weren't even going to tell her we were doing an ultrasound. So we needed her sedated because we couldn't take a chance on her popping her head up and seeing what was on that ultrasound image, because the ultrasound would then expose the lie of the abortion industry.
When I was 18 years old, I was in high school, and I was pregnant 3 months, and I wasn't gonna have the baby, and my mom wanted to support me, so she went with me to the abortion clinic. Waiting there, and while I was waiting there, I saw the women there with their robes, their pink robes, and they were very sad. So at that time, I just got depressed in the moment, and I just started thinking, and I guess started praying, asking for signs. And in my mind, just came to me, I think it was God, you know? He was like, go look at your sonogram. And when I saw the picture, it was a picture of a baby at 3 months, and she had legs, she had a big head and the arms. And in an instant, I asked the lady, I said, did you know that it was a baby? At first, I was like, it's a baby, you know? And because many people told me that it was a glob of tissue, and I was already 3 months, and I was only 18, and it's not fair, you know? But here's my daughter, she's 10, and God's been with me. I have her in Immaculate Conception School. And when she was 3, I met Christ, and that's when God revealed to me that he has saved my child.
You know, I've sort of changed my verbiage when it comes to talking about abortion and what exactly it is that abortion is. You know, in layman terms, we would say abortion is murder. But I think that the discussion we need to be having as conservatives and as teachers needs to be more compassionate. A lot of these young women who head to an abortion clinic are not doing this because they believe it's murder. They were doing it because they believe it's a clump of cells, and they think that, you know, they're getting to this clump of cells before it becomes a baby.
When does human life begin?
I think... It's like the most annoying thing
ever. Do you know the answer to that scientifically?
No.
I don't know the answer to that.
I believe that it begins at some point when the fetus can live viably outside the womb.
It is better to let 1,000 abortions occur, to let however many abortions occur that need to happen, in favor of helping the already alive small children that are going to die because of a lack of vaccines, a lack of health care, a lack of shelter. I say that is where your efforts would be better concentrated.
So a fetus with no brain activity, no thoughts, no spirit, no personality, no anything, that's not a life.
While different opinions are very appreciated in different settings, this opinion is dangerous
and
to
it's
people.
Uneducated.
Well, it's saving babies, so I don't see it as dangerous.
Not. Saving babies doesn't exactly correlate to saving lives.
Saving lives.
And it's not their fault that they're being brainwashed. It's not their fault that they're so ignorant. So I've tried to almost extend a hand to those girls and to say to girls that I went to school with that I know who got an abortion, it's still okay to change your mind. If you were ignorant and you made a decision and you're now knowledgeable and you now understand how cruel and how awful abortion is, and you now understand that it is not a clump of cells, at 10 weeks, my husband and I are pregnant, 5.5 months, and at the 10-week scan, I was so shocked to see little hands and little feet and a body dancing around, and at the same time, I felt so astonished that I had been lied to throughout my entire public school system. I had been lied to.
The goal is very clear. We have to completely end abortion, abolish it, make it unthinkable culturally. As we do that, build a culture of life, a culture that sees life, a new human life, as a gift, that celebrates mothers and fathers, that sees the family as this cornerstone of any society. And so restoring that and growing that is the ultimate mission.
The best thing that we can do as conservatives and being on the side of truth is to have compassion for these young women. Because when I see them angry and I see them with their posters and shouting and saying, "My body, my choice," I see a bunch of young women that are hurt. It is not natural. It goes against our biology as women to be fighting against babies being born.
You know, our world says that we don't exist, that abortion survivors are somehow made up, right? We're just some political ploy. That we're just ordinary people.
And even if you were a young woman who got an abortion because you were operating with a limited perspective, you can change your mind and you can become one of the loudest voices for the pro-life movement. You could tell your story. You can tell how you were transformed, how you had gotten it wrong, what that abortion did to you emotionally. Because I know there are so many young women who are impacted negatively by getting an abortion. We can all just do better to be more compassionate and to extend a hand. And I think that would be the best way for us to grow the pro-life movement and the pro-life message.
You would never know by looking at me today that when I survived that failed abortion, the prognosis for my life was very poor. I suffered from severe respiratory and liver problems, seizures. The doctors thought I had a fatal heart defect initially because of the amount of distress that I was under. And so they were very guarded about what my future might hold. But I have continued to live, and I have been loved. I was loved mightily by my adoptive parents, no matter what they were told about what my life was going to look like. And now I am loved by my biological mother and members of her family, who now stand by my side.
Your life was not for nothing. We celebrate your heartbeat.
I experienced joy knowing that the Lord saved my life.
The price that you paid.
But I've spent about 30 years also knowing that that's the day I was meant to be delivered dead. And there's no escaping that reality for me.
Turn a blind eye and just look away. For the sake of all that's pure and true, we will lay our lives down just for you.
Social worker, I'm an activist, I'm a teacher, I'm a writer. All of these things make me who I am. But without my life, none of those things would have ever been possible.
We celebrate your heartbeat. The price that you paid.
Melissa's story of surviving an abortion is rare, and yet the story of her mother's situation is all too common. For many women, sadly, abortion seems like the only choice. They're driven to fear the other life-saving and empowering options that would protect both heartbeats.
That's why pregnancy resource centers are a place of safety for women and men. They can provide you with the services, education, and support you need to make a decision about an unplanned pregnancy, confidentially and compassionately.
When a woman is facing an unexpected pregnancy, she's often trying to choose between what she believes will be the path with the least pain. And sadly, sometimes women choose abortion. Oftentimes, these women feel pressured by partners, by family members, and later she regrets her decision. But you can't go back.
And what is undeniable in every single case with an abortion is the way that it's conducted. Whether by chemicals or by surgery, there is but one goal. And that's to end a preborn human life.
Freedom, 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 freedom.
I lived in a home that was bombed in Birmingham, Alabama because of racism. And I marched and went to jail for civil rights. I was energetic, hopeful, positive, even in the face of all we were facing, guns, dogs, bombs, billy clubs. Martin Luther King Jr., in his last Christmas sermon before he was assassinated, said that we must learn to value the human personality, then we won't kill anybody. So civil rights actually began in the womb.
You know what? A woman has a right to choose what she does with her body, but the baby's not her body. Where's the lawyer for the baby?
Our battle in this nation has been about defining who is worthy of personhood. Because yet in every time, there were those willing to stand and raise their voices. For them, the road was desolate and dangerous at times, but the mission was worth the risk because the life-affirming, life-giving reward that they pursued was going to change generations. Now today, we are standing as one of those people during the greatest civil rights crisis of our time.
This is a pivotal moment. If we have another Supreme Court justice appointed who recognizes that Roe v. Wade is bad law, it could change everything.
I think we're going to see an end to legalized and culturally accepted abortion in my lifetime. And I'm excited to be alive and to be part of it.
So for the Black community, if you look across inner cities today, many inner cities, there are more Black babies that are aborted than born alive. If it wasn't for the abortion industry, and the founder of the abortion industry, Margaret Sanger, and her history of eugenics, actually believing that people of color were not equipped. She didn't want them breeding because there would have been too many of them. I mean, this is has severe racist beginnings.
In 1916, Sanger opened the country's first birth control clinic. As a member of the American Eugenics Society, she advocated improving the genetic composition of humans through controlled reproduction of different races and classes. Many point to a 1923 New York Times interview as proof of Sanger's racist motives, in which she referred to people as weeds, saying,
"It means the release and cultivation of the better racial elements in our society and the gradual suppression, elimination, and eventual extirpation of defective stocks, those human weeds which threaten the blooming of the finest flowers of American civilizations."
And most Black Americans don't know that because Planned Parenthood has really made a leap into the public education system.
Former Planned Parenthood Director Abby Johnson says those inside the abortion industry are trained to overlook Sanger's racist views.
They give you an answer like, well, I mean, yes, Margaret Sanger was a racist, but everybody was a racist back then. You accept it because she is your hero.
In 1942, Margaret Sanger's American Birth Control League became Planned Parenthood, which has moved to fulfill its founder's goals, helped greatly by the Supreme Court decision in Roe versus Wade.
Under the veil of secrecy and deception, 60 plus million babies have not been born because they were aborted legally since 73. One third of that population
belong to the African-American community.
A frightening and telling number, given blacks make up only 13% of the U.S. population.
A hard-hitting truth is that the most unsafe place for a black child is not on the streets, it's not when they see a police officer, it's in their mother's womb. More than half of the black population would be double today if it wasn't for abortion. We've lost 18 million black babies since 1973.
The pro-life movement of today is primarily, it's a human rights movement, because without the right to life, which is a foundational right, you have no other right. So think about what Harriet Tubman fought for. Think about what Dr. Martin Luther King fought for. He said, I have a dream, and he fought for children. Harriet Tubman fought for the next generation. They fought for freedom. Right now, abortion is the number one cause of death in the black community. Right now, black women are 3 times more likely to have an abortion than white women. So, in fighting for life, in fighting for the next generation to live and to prosper and to grow, you're fighting for their dreams. We are in a time of reckoning, and we are in a time of looking at the racist history of our country in the past and what we've been through, and trying to go forward and trying to seek unity and trying to make a better tomorrow. And eliminating abortion is part of that. It's actually key to that, because when we can erase abortion, then we will have freedom and we will have a greater purpose and a greater promise, because we won't be killing off our legacy. We won't be killing our sons and daughters. We will be upholding and building the next generation.
I think the human experience is one of the greatest gifts God gives us, that chance at life. There's no guarantees it's going to be smooth sailing the whole way. My life certainly hasn't been that, but you know what? Having the ability to make your way, having the ability to love that person you're going to love, hopefully for a lifetime. These are the treasures of life. And then hopefully having children to pass on what it is you believe in for the next generation. And it comes with a lot of strain and testing, but this is life. And I don't think anyone should take that from another person.
I remember as a kid, my mom telling me of the time that she really had been advised to abort me.
Mike Singletary is a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the sport's highest honor. He was elected to 10 consecutive Pro Bowls and wears a Super Bowl ring. But statistics only tell part of the story.
The doctors told your dad and I that they said that you would not live a normal childhood life and you'd be very sickly, and they really advised us to abort you.
Opponents had to know where Singletary was at all times. He was a master of the game who played with unrelenting, hard-hitting intensity. A pillar of consistency in his 12-year career, he only missed 2 games.
Those of us in football would have missed out on a great warrior if Mike Singletary would have been aborted. But even more importantly, people outside of the game would have missed out on Mike Singletary's love and wisdom. That's what abortion does. It robs the world of goodness, gentleness, and greatness. Despite what doctors were telling them, Mike's parents chose life. But tragically, sometimes parents don't, and it often affects people you wouldn't expect.
I'll never forget that moment of sitting when my girlfriend in my 20s was scared that she was pregnant. I found a place nearby that offered free pregnancy tests and had no idea where I was leading us into. And as we got the word that in fact she was pregnant, the next statement from whoever this person was talking to us said, and by the way, we can take care of that right now. I had no idea that I'd walked us into an abortion clinic.
It's really interesting when you begin to talk about the man's role in this. And I just think that as a man, the best thing that you can do in a situation is just be able to offer your support. I don't really know how to go forth, but I'm here. Let me know what I can do to help.
And then it was done and it was over. And in that, wow, man, that ushered in such a dark season for me. The decision that I had made, and it ruined that relationship with that girl. It caused me to go into a very deep, dark depression. You know, we hear that this is the woman's body, this is her choice. I'm sort of a bystander, sort of a second thought in this whole thing. It shouldn't bother me as much as maybe it would bother her. And wow, that could not be further from the truth. That is such a lie. I mean, the instant shame, the instant guilt, the instant depression, devastation, all of that was there and still there. There honestly isn't a day that goes by that I don't wish that could be different. I would that I couldn't have this child a part of my life. You know, we could be hanging out and connected and doing life together. And that was gone in an instant for me, that possibility. This may seem like a simple choice, and someone's telling you that this won't bother you and it'll be okay and you'll get over it. You won't. You'll heal. God will use this in your life in mighty ways. He'll never forget.
For Greg, the ripple effects of losing his son still resonate in his life. After making a decision he knew was wrong and even cowardly, the lies he believed about himself dictated the way he responded as a husband and as a father.
For a while, Greg even abandoned his call to ministry, thinking there was no way that God would ever forgive him, heal him, or love him. But he was mistaken.
Those who have participated in an abortion, the men that have participated, maybe you've cast your lot. You didn't want that responsibility. So you said yes, or maybe you pressured her to get that abortion. Forgiveness is not beyond the reach of God, and you are not beyond the reach of God.
The choice isn't without pain, either way. That there's pain there, and there's gonna be heartache, and you're gonna have moments of regret, whatever you decide, but I tell you, you'll never regret having this child. And whether this child is raised by someone else or raised by you, you will never, ever, ever, you'll never regret that. Otherwise, you will spend a lifetime of regret. I can tell you that. I've spent so much time getting counseling, healing, working through these issues. I would give anything. I'd give my life right now if I thought that was possible, to trade my life, my son's life, so that he could grow up. And you feel that, and you wrestle with that forever. These emotions will always be there. You're gonna see another child about the same age, and you're just gonna wonder. Just, it'll happen. It's okay. God will heal you from that. But don't go through that. Don't make that choice. There's such a beautiful choice available to you, and that's to give life.
I think in life, when you get to that point of really not knowing when you have to make a choice, and you know it's the right choice, but you don't control the outcome, those are the times that you really have to take a step back and really say, Lord, there's this blind faith here. I don't know what's on the other side of this. I'm gonna trust you, but I know that on this side of it, I'm gonna be in obedience. I am going to do the things that I know that I can control. And on the other side of that, I'm gonna trust that you got the rest.
We should be people who dedicate our lives to reckless love and forgiveness for the men and women making these tough decisions. Because we know that even in our most wretched state, he who guards our lives forgave us. Don't ever think that you're alone. There are people everywhere who want to uphold and affirm and cherish life. There are people everywhere who want to lead their families well. There are people everywhere who want to enter into this fight humbly with compassion, understanding that it's not about being right. It's about saving lives. May our grieving of today because of these laws, may it soon turn into joy as men and women unite with one voice across culture, class, and creed. And we hold our country to the fire because they said that the unalienable right is the right to life. Let us continue to fight for that.
We want you to see life and yourself through God's eyes. With an ultrasound, you can see and hear your baby.
It's amazing. We can't wait to show you the baby.
And I promise, you're going to love every heartbeat they make.
I called a friend and I told her, I'm in trouble. I think this is happening. What would I do now? The moment I saw that heartbeat, changed everything. Everything. That was life. And that was her. Sorry. That sonogram made real that my daughter was there.
Come on, baby. Cute little bottom lip sticking out right there. See the little nose right there? The baby's using the placenta like a little pillow. Every
heartbeat. Every dance and sing.
But seeing a heartbeat and that's inside you, you can almost feel the heartbeat inside. So that was real. That made me think, I'm a mom and I need to give life to this. And that's how everything changed.
Perhaps the simplest thing we can all do for life right now is to contact Focus on the Family. Focus is offering an opportunity for you to help a woman get that ultrasound. By giving these ultrasound machines, you very well might save a baby.
The key to saving a life is seeing life. And today, you have the opportunity to save a baby from abortion. Together with Focus on the Family's Option Ultrasound program, you can help abortion-vulnerable mothers see life and choose life for only $60. That's it. Your life-saving gift of $60 will provide a clear ultrasound and pivotal resources to help mothers say yes to their babies. And there's more great news. By standing up for the unborn today, your gift will double in impact through an incredible matching opportunity. That means your gift of $60 will save not one, but two babies. However, the time to make twice the impact won't last long. Join us and take action today. Double your gift up to $100,000 and help a mother choose life by letting her see life. Please give generously and save twice as many lives today. Text ALIVE to 72,000 or go to focusonthefamily.com/alive.
What you just saw is what so many people don't want the world to see. 10 fingers, 10 toes, and a cute little scrunched up nose. How can you deny it's a baby when you hear her heartbeat and see her first pictures? You can't. And that's why so many people don't want these images broadcast. Because once you see the baby, you can no longer see the lie as a truth. It's not a lump of tissue. It's not a formless blob. It's a baby. a beautiful baby. And there's a reason our founders enshrined into our nation's DNA a right to life in the Declaration of Independence. It's a fundamental first freedom. We want to invite you on a great adventure with us. Here at Focus on the Family, we're deeply committed to the sanctity of life. We'll never stop fighting for the children who cannot fight for themselves. We're dedicated to the great mission of our day, which is protecting every innocent life inside the womb. And thank you for being with us today. Join us in the weeks, months, and years to come. You're needed now more than ever. You're a voice for the voiceless. If not you, who? If not now, when? And trust me when I say this, your courage will convict others. It was the late evangelist Dr. Billy Graham who famously said, "Courage is contagious. When a brave man takes a stand, the spines of others are often stiffened." He was right. Please pray with us. Please help us. Please join us. God bless you all.
You break my chains. ashamed of what I've done, what I've become. These hands are dirty. I dare not lift them out to the Holy One. Ooh. You plead my cause, you right my wrongs, you break my chains, you overcome. You gave your life to give me mine. You say that I still love me.